Well, the man called Robert Mayer, or Meyer, as I call him, was a German metal merchant who supported music, children's concerts, who died at the age of 105. When he was 100, a concert given his honor in Festival Hall, in the speech, Queen appeared in it. He hopped into the park. And Diana Cooper, whom I knew, approached me, and Queen was about in their chair. Said, awful thing has happened to me. And she came up to me. Somebody, a lady came up to me and said, how are you, really, Diana? I said, well, I'm old and mad, deaf and all that. Still, I go on, I go on. I try to go on. And I didn't want to give up. And I kept wondering. I knew the face. I couldn't think who she was. Then I saw another one, throwing the jewels on her, so I realized it's the Queen. So then I said, oh ma'am, I have a girl, forgive me, I'm out of my mind. I had no idea that it was you. I'm afraid but you see, well, the thing was that you weren't wearing your crown. It was the Queen's. Well, as I thought this morning, and I thought about going out this evening, I thought rather Sir Robert's evening. But I wouldn't.
Very nice.
Quite all right.
Very nice. Very
perfect all right from all sides. Everyone emerges. Perfect credit.
I wanted to ask you what you thought of Sir Michael Tippett, if I hadn't interviewed him before performance the last time.
I like him.
Yeah. I know you like him personally.
Personally. I think he's a...
Why do you like him?
I can't tell you why. I think something very genuine about him. Extremely sincere.
Yeah.
Very genuine, very slightly dotty. But,
Dotty because he's a pacifist.
Well, all the Henry Jung and all the libretti, which are totally confused and rather dotty. He wanders about some dark Jungian forest. Mm-hmm. No harm in a composer, many arts are doing that. All that. And it's booey, could be quirky, all that. But there's something genuine, very human, very decent, generous, kind and gifted.
Yeah.
And I always think the music in Rock is quite as good as I would like it to be.
Yes.
I never liked Britain, you see. And I remember the famous statement, I remember the jeunesse savait, the vieillesse pouvait.
Yes.
I used to think, see Britain, savait, see, et puis pouvait. But he's quite all right when you're interviewing him. Why not?
A bit crazy to me, but he asked for reasons.
Not for you?
Asked me mostly because I'm a musical illiterate, and he thought better have a musical illiterate than...
He probably watches his own television or something. That's the country's part. Who's that name?
I met him once.
He must have some moral respect for him. That's what I mean, really. He must have some sense of... affinity.
It's not something I could refuse.
No, that's not.
Anyway.
The only time I felt that, you know, one of my friends in Oxford, I never saw him much, a man I greatly admired, some people hated, and there was an excellent man called Dodds. Professor E.R. Dodds.
Dodds.
Professor of Greek. Our machine is on.
Yes.
All right. Well, he was a father figure to Auden and McNeice. And he had been professor of Greek in Memphis, and they were there. And McNeice must have been on his staff, and Auden's father was wearing something new. And he was a very good doctor. Anyway, very honorable figure, quite good. He's Irish, I think, Norman, but he was rocked before the First World War. Rosebud, not very good, but was very genuine, original, and interesting man. With very good and interesting ideas. Many, I didn't know very much about him, except he was interested in Neoplatonism. And did various things about Plotinus, Proclus, and all these other old thinkers. Christian era, more or less. Well, and there could be something exceptional about it. My friend Maurit Bauer wanted to be professor of Greek more than anything else in the world, and stopped being a socialist and began to work very hard in order to get it. Began reading book after book. The first book was rather good, the other books were not good. And he wanted to please Joseph Murray, who couldn't have liked him. Whatever. Either personally or intellectually, you couldn't.
I mean, why?
Because Maurit Bauer was frivolous, sensual, amusing, witty, sort of ironic, and rather John Bullock, too, in a way. In a kind of hearty, extrovert, patriotic way. He was very liked. High mindedness. Into the inner life of the League of Nations. Peace. Nobility. And snobbery too. Was awful. It was no good. And Gilman was kind of typical high-minded liberal. No, rather on the vegetarian kind. Maurit Bauer was, if ever there was a man who was carnivorous. If ever there was a man who was carnivorous, it was he. Flesh, and a great deal to him. Murray,
Tim. I've heard
it more. Superior view of that. Anyway, Lady Mary Murray was a Puritan. Loathed Maurit Bauer, from her point of view, quite rightly. I mean, she was a woman, she was the daughter of a woman who emptied the entire wine cellar of the great house of the Carlyles into the moat. Was she? Well, it really was. And she was a water drinker of a rigid kind. It seemed severe. And I might have been sort of feminist, knowing of the world, Lady Mary. So it was a hopeless business. Anyway, Murray chose Dodds. He had no business to choose successor anyway. Because Keith Baldwin, who was Prime Minister appointed in the regions, was going to consult him, his most admired figure in classical world, rightly. Because he was kind of genius, Murray. Apart from being a superb Greek scholar, in the ordinary, straightforward sense, he was a genius at knowing what cultures were. Very good at that. Dodds appointed him because the Rome in the end, Maurit Bauer was crushed by this. And as part of the revenge, he and the others began to read Dodds' poetry after dinner to his friends. It was not embarrassing, Dodds' poetry. It was a lot of watery, sexy stuff. So I got on with Dodds. He's, well, left wing, high minded, abominably treated in Christchurch, for which he became a student, as I called the Christchurch fellow. And Lindemann, and awful people like that hated him. He'd been a pacifist in the First World War. He lived in Ireland, went to Ireland in order to avoid it. He took an interest in spiritual matters, read Freud, took an interest in Trump, founded Plato in a Freudian manner, rather than interestingly. Wrote a marvelous book called The Greek and the Irrational, which is no good to any of these people.
Yeah.
And his colleague, Doug Page, who was the classic Don Christchurch, was a conservative. By that time, all was despising. It seemed to them exactly what I was trying to make out of Lord Kenneth. It seemed to them a real sandal wearing, wet and open nature. But I loved him and got on with him.
Yeah.
And made my difficult relation to Maurit Bauer a little difficult. So I didn't see him often, I saw him once a year. But when we met, there was a certain natural sympathy.
Yeah.
Partly because he had read my books, quite liked them, read my articles. Looked into the Russian literature, I think. My proudest moment was when he read an autobiography called Absent Persons.
Yeah.
It was rather good. And it got, rather incongruously, Duff Cooper Prize. No nobody could be further from him ideologically. Of course, you can imagine. And somebody had to present it. And he asked for me to do it. I didn't, because I had flu that day. So it was done by Conor Cruz O'Brien, who was the next person on his list, naturally. So the fact that he asked for me to do it was wonderful. I've never felt better pleased, because I had great admiration for him. Scholar, the man's pure character, and I could understand very well why he ordered the McNeese for his mouth. Was a sort of father figure to them. Yeah. What did my mother say? He's politically an idiot. Silly. So he was like, high-minded, silly, prig, prude, awful.
As I wanted to talk a little bit.
What about the war? The coming war. I read your article. You were rather troubled. Appear to be rather troubled.
So
I don't know what I feel.
I suddenly thought a lot of people are going to die.
Well,
and they're going to die because of the siege and the war ends.
No.
One of those war ends is the invasion of Iraq, and I think that's a mistaken war end. A mistaken war end. We should not invade Iraq.
Why?
We should retake Kuwait.
Why not invade Iraq? It's a fascist country at the moment. If you're going to be and organize some kind of order in the Middle East, which is not undesirable, including Palestine, so long as he's there, infinite trouble will occur. I don't want him killed, particularly. There'd be much cheaper way out if you could be assassinated, much better than war. Still, I don't particularly want your question, because I don't think individual murder has that effect. I certainly want him, listen, discredited, yes. Not, yes. Because otherwise I think that, he's a genuine, rather, so to speak, sort of, what's called a flash dictator, you know what I mean. Wants to conquer, be in control of the Middle East, wants to be a kind of local Napoleon, you see. And that, I think, would cause far more harm than the people killed in the war.
What price do I
ask? How well, we will ask. One can't tell. One can't tell, you see. One can't what price. Well, you can't suddenly stop the middle of war, I admit, to say, enough blood. Now we retreat. That's all difficult. What price? I don't know. I was in favor of the Falkland War. To do. What? Because I think if people invade other people's territory, everything must be done to stop them. Otherwise, the whole world can become a kind of and more lives will be lost and horrors will happen. You may say, well, what of Iraq? Small Middle East power, vis-a-vis Russia, America. What can they do? They can do quite a lot. Quite a lot of harm. Israel, I think, is reasonably safe, personally enough. I think it's rather frightened Israel. I think they have nasty weapons, which is probably rather leery of. But the other countries? No, I think if people attack, I agree, you ought to go out of Kuwait. But if that means the war doesn't be a war, I'm a hawk. I don't know why I'm a hawk. I think I'm a hawk on principle, of that principle. I believe in the United Nations, funnily enough. Absurd as it is. If it actually decides to do something, or somebody decides to stop somebody, you may say, what about Panama, you may say. Well, that was wrong. That was wrong. Because the Panamanian dictator wasn't taking anybody seriously. It was being badly the United American businessmen. But that's different. See, that was wrong. And it was wrong to oust the, what was the leaders of Chile and of somebody else too, there was a man, Marxist, before that, you remember? Was it Venezuela or something? No. One of the Latin American countries had some kind of, with a kind of German sounding name. The CIA got rid of him. And it was very wrong to get rid of, what's his name, Mossadegh.
Yeah.
All that I'm against.
Yeah.
It was true with me.
Yeah.
But this is somewhat different.
Just because he's a fascist.
Well, Well, the fascist with fascist ambitions. Not only the fascist vis-a-vis their people, and a killer, seems to go very irresponsible kind. I mean, you remember that story about asking the generals whether they think it would be a good thing to fight war. I mean, what do they think about the possibility of war? Would it be successful? One or two press certain deaths. Or killed immediately. You remember that story. Immediately. Stop. Well, not only against the fascists, but because he wishes to impose a kind of fascist yoke on his neighbors. That's all. I don't, I mean, the Arab states are fascist enough anyway. Nobody can say they're democracies. But still, poor old Kuwait was comparatively decent. People, freedom of speech occurred, newspapers were printed, the Kuwaitis were not, didn't feel miserable. That's all I mean. You say, when should one go to war? Well, if we go to war, I agree. Only if no other means. Everyone keeps repeating that, and it's correct. I refuse to sign a letter against De Gaulle during the Algerian War, or the end of it, as a fascist dictator, roughly. Quite a lot of people did, including, I remember, Chiaromonte, who was the editor of the equivalent of Encounter in Italy, quite long before. And my name was included by mistake. And I rejected. Because I said that it wasn't bad enough to be assassinated. Not bad enough. They weren't concentration camps of France. Okay? All right, well, maybe against. And there wasn't a real oppression. One should only start a revolution or a war if any other consequence is worse. That I believe. That's all. I think what
the range of our disagreement is small.
I agree. I mean, only if it's worse. I think it would be, you may think not, but this is open to argument.
Well, I'm envisaging a war, and I think the war may be the only way to get it out of Kuwait. I, like you, I support the principle of collective security and all that. I haven't got any problem with that. I've just got a problem with taking the war to Baghdad, because I think that...
No, I agree. I think they bomb Baghdad would not be a good thing. But
I'll
tell you.
A lot of poison gas all over the world. More people. I just want to minimize deaths.
I'll tell you what I mean. I'll tell you what I really mean. And that is that what irritates me, and all the people who say, why isn't there more negotiation? Why can't they get asked to serve? Why can't they talk to him? I'm probably absurd to talk to him. We know that. And all this endless stuff about government isn't doing enough. What about my uncle? What about my son? I understand it, but it takes the form of saying these are warmongers.
Yeah.
They just won't, don't want peace. They don't, obviously one can do something with it. One can, one can't.
Yeah.
That's what he said. He said it, but Mrs. Thatcher on the other side.
Yeah.
Not transparent, these maneuvers. Willy Brandt may be more honest than that.
Yeah.
I'm hearing that now. And things can be done, negotiations, like negotiating with people in Lebanon. What has that got to do? There is a slight difference. When the secretary of the official cabinet said, why can't we recognize Syria? All right, they misbehaved 4 years ago. They got a bomb onto the Israeli plane. But if them were recognized, they may help with the conflict with Terry Wade. That I can understand. To recognize a bad country has been done in the past. The idea to pretend when a country is wicked is not recognized. I can't hope to get rid of Assad. What?
I do wish we had made an alliance with
our relatives. Yeah, oh well, he's on our side, yes. We've still not, England is still not recognized. It's not bad, though. But I'm sure it's right. No, no, he's worse than the other, in a way. They're worthy of each other. Both theoretically associates. Great Nazi stuff, in both cases. But the most optimistic thing to me and we didn't really want to discuss that on the table. But said to me, of what I want people, character. When I met a dinner the other day, we talked about all this. And he said, well, after your mayor, I think the king of Jordan can't survive. Which I think everyone says. There's something in it. If he goes, Jordan will become Palestinian. In which case, half the West Bank can be buttoned onto him. And that would be a possible solution. Certainly most optimistic thing I've heard yet. The point of Israel. Jordan book. Not impossible. Could it?
As I must, although I can see that they want to talk about the crooked timber.
I'd rather do that than talk about my cousins from Moscow who came here a fortnight ago.
I would like to talk about that too, but I want to talk
crooked
about
timber, go on.
A little bit about
crooked
timber.
Go on.
No, I was just reading it last week and I...
Go on.
I have a lot of difficulty with the distinction between pluralism and relativism.
Oh, it's quite difficult. There's no... There is a difference, yes. Yes, quite difficult to expound. People find it difficult to understand. Yes, that's... Let me try and finish. Relativism means I like coffee and you like tea. Nothing but that about that. You like coffee sweet, I like it without. You like concentration camps, I don't.
Relativism is the claim that
different values, that's it. Different people have different values. Nothing be done. You can try and persuade them to change their values, but we may fail. And anyway, different cultures are different, and they have different values, and neither of them, none is right or wrong, we have no criterion.
But is it a further claim that those values are basically derived from intuitive preference?
Not necessarily. It doesn't matter how they're derived. The point is they are different, and there's nothing to be done, but the idea is that we can't argue. I mean, you believe this, I believe that. Well, the ends are ends, and different people have different purposes in life or different tastes. We don't mind about tastes. We get rather worried when it gets to more serious matters. But taste is obviously Israel. Now, what's pluralism? I think the following, that the number of ends which human beings can, being human, strive after is not indefinitely great. It's 108 or 93, or whatever. These ends are such as one can understand. The case of others, say, one can imagine, by a piece of imagination, you can imagine if you were living in such a place, such a time, it would be, you would yourself be tempted to, you could imagine yourself as pursuing this kind of goal, though you might perhaps, on reflection, think it wrong, and certainly don't want it now. If you can understand that all these ends are human ends, and that by pursuing them, people don't dehumanize themselves, however unsympathetic to you they may be, then I think you can regard them as objective and not as relative. And say they are what human beings can pursue and remain. The test is whether you can communicate, whether you have any common ground which you can argue. Let me explain to you what I mean, give you an example. What I mean, if we, before I give an example, that's what he had done, really, did. You see, I mean, different cultures have different centers of gravity. But, nevertheless, communication and even sympathy is possible. With the Nazis, you can't, because in the case of the Nazis, I know what I think. I don't think that they were mad or the idea of exterminating Jews was such that this is just, Stuart Hampshire's, placebo. Now I can't talk about it. We may have to kill them, yes. That's not a matter. You have to protect the culture which you believe. But I believe about the Nazis, they were human beings like us. They happened to have empirically false beliefs to the effect that Jews were sub-men and poisoning culture. So long as there were Jews there, German values, which is what they believed, would be totally compromised and rot away. So long as that happened, they would treat like vermin and exterminated. Well, more. But that's a mistake. I would say that's an empirical error. It may be incurable, but it isn't a question of values. The values are intelligible. If you believe, you see, in the theory of what the Jews are, then you can see how it might be that they would want to destroy them. You see, just if you know what a Catholic in the 17th century is, you understand why they want to kill Protestants. Because you know there's only one path to heaven. And these people subvert. You can say, all right, that's a factual belief. That's not a question of values. You know there's only one way. Extra ecclesia, nulla salus, extra ecclesia. You see, here are these wicked people who subvert faith and these victims because they are, we must say, Inquisition. That's all right. It's intelligible. You may say we must go to war because they're incurable. Nothing will cure them, this belief. In the meanwhile, the damage they do is such that there's less damage if we kill them. All right, that's what I think about Iraq. That's another matter. They have to bear those values. Your own values. Murder is wrong, and saving the rent is right. And, but all these values are your values. And they're objective in the sense that they really are what you're prepared to give up your life to promote. And that's enough. There's no more objectivity than is possible. But you can understand why other people might have the same attitude, and you understand their point of view at the point. And if you understand their point of view at all, even if you're not sympathetic, then these values are equally objective. You see that they're there, that they're not arbitrary. See what I mean? They're not arbitrary, not just a matter of taste.
Let's go back to the Nazis.
That's what pluralism is.
Yes.
Hence, you see, you get valuation.
Yes.
And hence you get trade-offs in the industry.
Yes.
There are plenty of cultures which we, I mean, don't sympathize. I don't think they're pleasures in Rome. But you can see that the Romans believed that something which human beings with whom you communicate can believe. You can argue. You can try and say, in your system of belief, what do you make of this, what do you make of that, why do you believe this? Surely this contradicts something you also believe. You can have arguments about whether their beliefs are coherent, or whether they really do believe what they say they believe. Whether the consequences of their beliefs are such that they're prepared to accept. That's all the argument people disagree. But the assumption is that there is common ground. So the common ground is something objective.
Now, what then is the connection between that view of pluralism and your political liberalism?
Ah, that I've never understood myself. I think only this, that liberalism is founded on, in very simple attitudinous terms, on mutual tolerance. That you allow people to pursue their goals without forcing them into some framework of which you understand the value and they do not, which is the position of every kind of patriarchal system, any kind of more than that, less material, you need to be efficient. I don't know, that's what if you have children and you want to lead them to better pastures. Very quite concerned. Liberalism depends on the denial of the universality of your particular values, which are binding on others as much as yourself. And being binding, if people resist, something has to be done. To coerce them. Educate if you can. Pass laws if you must, but coerce them in the end. Liberalism roughly means people are allowed to do what they like, provided they don't do things which are worse than if they didn't. Worse. And the worseness you claim is something which a lot of people in a lot of times, in a lot of places, would recognize. That's far as you can go. Can't say everybody. But if a large number of people, a large number of times, in other words, human differences are exaggerated. A lot of people, a lot of the time, in a lot of countries, think that lying is wrong, that murder is bad, and that courage is a good thing, whatever it is, and that love is all right.
Those are common values.
Quite a lot of them. Which individuals may deny, which are sufficiently widespread to be able to say, this is the life by which we live. That's the form of life. Without which I don't think I can survive.
You see, the conservative critique of liberalism always is that liberalism actually requires relativism, not pluralism. It requires relativism, that is, the liberal tolerance requires...
Your values are as good as mine.
Yes, it requires
not
that.
Not so.
And you're saying no.
Not so. Not so. That's the only originality of my position.
You're saying there has to be a common, there is empirically
yes.
a common world.
Everything's empirical for me. When it's empirical, it's a fact that. And a fact that is something to me is ultimate. I don't ask for transcendent guarantees. You know what I mean? Since I didn't believe in God. Since I didn't believe in metaphysics. In that sense, I was cured of that, I mean, by, I don't know, by resort. My day. That is so. I think, but what I think is this. Let me refine this point. I think human beings act and experience in terms of categories. That's to say, by categories I mean something very simple. For example, things in space. We think on the whole lumps of stuff are about the case. We also think there are gases. We also think there is water. These are what I mean is part of the furniture of the world which we take for granted. There are certain other categories too, like good and bad, right and wrong. The words for right and wrong don't exist outside the English language. It's rather mysterious. They don't, you know. What is the French for right and wrong? Juste? What? No, very, very true. No, right and wrong. Good and bad, bon et mauvais. Right. Now, right. And there's something different from good. We'll see what it is. It's a very Anglo-Saxon and a very Hebrew thing. But there's right and wrong. The French say juste and injuste. Not quite the same. The word fair doesn't exist outside English. So, Rawls's book, Justice as Fairness, is not operational.
As Alan Montefiore's wife discovered.
She is a she. She's not really. I don't know. Say equitable, which is the best you can do. Anyway, come back. We live in terms of categories. Right and wrong, good and bad. Red and blue are different. We come to them. Old and young, anything like. Now, these are set. And we assume them to be set for the Romans as well. I think maybe they're slightly different color words. But it isn't very different. The Romans also knew their bodies, and the right and wrong noses. Now, some of these things are pretty fixed. Like, straight and crooked, true and false. Value words. I mean, whether good or right or beautiful, what we approve or what we don't. Good thing, bad thing. Others are more flexible. For example, you can imagine that you might be four dimensions. Not easy, but you can. In that case, with a right angle, something with a right angle to a cube, we would not be able to see it. Somebody living in four dimensions would say, now he's gone in the direction Gug. So what's Gug? I can't explain. Because we can't explain two-dimensional beings, what we mean by saying behind. That could be worked out.
Yes.
Take the effort. That could be. That category could be shaken. I mean, it's permanent. I'll work with it. You could imagine it could change. Material object could change. Everything could become a gas. Which is 1, 2, 3, 4 might be a little difficult. So there are these fixes, these are different order of flexibility. In politics and morals, there are also categories. Nothing like as firm as the other ones. But they exist.
Well, let's take a few. The thing that's disturbing about Dumas is that he says it's as much a fact about human beings that they want to slaughter each other as the fact that they love each other or are capable of trusting each other. And the doubt addressed by Mass to liberalism is simply that liberalism conveniently ignores facts about human moral behavior.
So it does. That's why I like Mason. Some truth in it.
Yes.
It's exaggerated.
Yes.
Number of people want to talk to other people isn't that great.
Yes.
I mean, there are research things as aggressiveness, of course.
Yes.
There is something, for example, I've always believed in wars. Are mainly created by boredom.
Yes.
Like the students. When peace has been on too long, people get bored. They want action.
Yes.
They want something bad. They want upheaval.
Yes.
And that's true. Well, what we're proud of our level is chapter two. People have these instincts. They do want to do it. Something has to be done. Stop it.
Yes.
Direct their energies in other directions. Create fences. Stop them doing it. If necessary by violence, that's all right. But I mean, his right point about liberalism is too naive. I believe that these 18th century philosophers were too naive. The idea that all good things can be had is false. And therefore, the idea that the great thing is Condorcet, who said, in future, there will be only one method of establishing things. Calculables. Let us calculate.
And you do not believe that?
No.
Yeah.
No. And I was taught that by Machiavelli, by Cartwright, by the Master and all, perhaps I knew it before, because I saw the Russian Revolution.
Yeah.
But I mean, but I mean, therefore, human beings are not simple entities presupposed by H.G. Wells, or people in the 18th century, or even John Stuart Mill. You see? The psychology is wrong.
Well,
but it's a factual thing.
Yes. But let's look a little more closely at what you say of Dumas. Because you say at one point, men's desire to exterminate themselves is as fundamental as their desire for self-preservation or happiness. That's a paraphrase of Dumas. What might follow from that is that Dumas's executioner
is the thing which stops it.
Yes.
We depend on it.
Yes, and the difficulty, therefore, is to know exactly how a liberal argues against those premises.
Well, you have to say, even if this is true, not absolutely clear that it is exaggerated. The idea that men want to exterminate each other is just as strong as the fact that people want to love each other. Well, the men want to love each other, but on the whole, most people want peace, justice, happiness, but some don't, and some get bored of it. But no doubt, this is not universal. There are enough exceptions to worry us.
Yes.
But the point is, if you believe in these other values, you and the most members of your culture, then you are entitled to abort these other instincts.
Yes.
And you have to say why? You say because the values in which you believe, in which you believe, most people believe, you have to say that, which humanity has lived by, are endangered by them.
Yes.
Nobody's ever quite denied that. Very few people have said war is a thing.
Yes.
Extermination is it. I mean, Nietzsche may have talked like that, you see what I mean?
Yes.
People who talk like that are somehow exceptional.
Yes.
And that's my case. If something changed, if human nature suddenly altered in some drastic way, I wouldn't know what to say. I really wouldn't. I would say my world's collapsed.
Yes.
I'm not a relative, don't know where to go. then what?
But you see, many people who live through your exact period of life, from the Russian Revolution through the Holocaust, believe precisely that their world collapsed.
Yeah,
believe precisely that the entire set of assumptions that they had made
about political behavior
and human action were overthrown by what they saw in the 30s and 40s.
They were wrong.
Why?
Because the ideals in the name of which all these horrors were done were perfectly acceptable in principle. None of these people denied that equality wasn't a good, that exploitation might be an evil. They made secret, not believed in, but still, they would concede that the purposes of communism were not monstrous. They would even concede that the purpose of fascism, which is domination of German way of life, or it doesn't suit us. We would say we don't want to live a German life, but that in itself was intelligent. The world didn't collapse. They only collapsed because they thought people couldn't behave like that. But that's wrong. They just didn't know enough about human beings. The psychology was short-sighted, but the morality was not.
Sorry, who is there?
All the people were upset by this. Yeah. Who said, my world collapsed. I don't know where I am. And people behave like Stalin. Inconceivable. I mean, people go to slaughter like that. Their loved ones are killed without resistance. I don't know what's going on. These are not human beings as I understand them. They're wrong about that. They're wrong about that. Genghis Khan did it. I mean, when the Germans, in self-exaggeration, tried to say, why pick on us? Other massacres have happened. There's some truth in that. It doesn't excuse them.
No.
That's self-exaggeration. It won't work.
But it's human only to human.
Yes, I know, but it's possible to say, yes, Genghis Khan, yes, Pol Pot, yes, Stalin. If you allow all that, why is it particular? Why do you think extermination of Jews is so especially terrible? Terrible, yes. But why is it especially? Well, because genocide is unusual. That's all new. But it's intelligent. My position is that, of course, that the human psychology is inadequate. That irrational forces and dark drive and all these things exist, and by now we know them. I don't think anyone today would be astonished by anything of that sort.
But the implication of that is that Bormann and Eichmann can be understood.
Yes.
We are not faced with something.
They're not losing. You don't get a nation that suddenly goes off its head. It's an easy way of talking. It isn't true. One understands what these people are after. It's very evil. It's very terrible. It's the worst thing that anyone may have wished. But one understands why they do it, and by God, they've got to be stopped. But one says, well, but can't you understand, isn't it wonderful to have the Germans on top of it, marvelous, put on the uniform, and glory has always been a human end, and killing your enemies is a very old story, and that's what they did in Romanic times. Then you say, well, we've learned something since. That's not true. Progress, I did believe. You see, the idea that we're morally better, after all, we have learned something in all these centuries. That's not quite true. We've learned some things and learned others.
Well, then we get into another kind of difficulty with your position. You don't believe in progress, but very frequently, in fact, just now,
you referred to the fact that there are certain... How to qualify?
You said history doesn't progress in moral terms, but you've also said
we can learn
from history.
Yes, yes. Within bounds, it does. It's wrong, is it? What I mean is, within the culture, there is progress.
Within our culture?
Within any culture, there can be progress. Between cultures, not necessarily. You see, I mean, we hang people for stealing a sheep. We no longer do that. And that's the progress. I can't deny that. It's more compatible with values which they and we both accept, which they are somehow unable to see. You see? But within, same thing with art.
No, let's stick with that example.
Right.
In the Arabic, in certain Arabic countries, they don't hang people for stealing sheep, but they cut off hands for adultery. Is it then possible for a Western liberal to say that is an inferior form of moral action?
Good.
If so, on what basis?
On the basis that human beings are rendered in disproportionate punishment, even though it is a very crime. Disproportionate means in the kind of culture in which we live, we don't want to do so much harm to people who have done comparatively so little. We believe in punishment.
But that's in our culture, I thought.
All right, well, they're mistaken. They've made a mistake about what human beings should be like, what human beings are, and what they can be. That's, and well, as we know, they don't. We may be wrong. We may have a deeper view for all the others. We can say within our cultural traits, and of course within kind of civilization, within our form of life, let's say our form of life, this is what you do. Then you say what your superiority is. Superiority lies in the fact you claim that your understanding of what people are and what will make them is nearer to what you think we both accept, namely happier, more just, more truthful, more everything. This is a bad means to all it. That's all you can say. But the assumption is certain common values. If there are no common values, then relativism is true. They don't believe it. And let me give an example of no common values, and then you'll see what I mean.
Yeah.
I always just give that example to my pupils. Supposing a man comes along, and he likes driving pins into people. And he's quite used to this. He says, because I was like, he says, do you like causing pain? He says, no, not particularly, just rather like driving pins into people. You realize that they hate it. Yeah, what of it? And you say, well, they can do the same to you. No, they can't, because I'm stronger than you. I can do it to them, they can't do it to me. Of course, if you did it to me, I'd stop. I'd resist, of course. And you say, but why do you want to drive these pins? Because I rather like driving pins into Brazilian services.